I should preach on the lottery when I try to use that. All right, if you'd like to open to Mark chapter 11, Mark chapter 11. We are glad you are here this morning. If you are visiting with us, and a whole bunch of you are, because there's a lot of unfamiliar faces, at least to me, here today. We're especially glad you're here. If you're a first-time visitor, we do have some gift bags back there, although it might be first come, first serve today. We'll see what happens. There's a bunch of you. But we're really glad you're here. There's also some folders back there to tell you more about the church. I'm assuming we've got several here for Carl and Lois's anniversary, so we've decided to start celebrating that weekly, so you can keep coming back every Sunday, and we'll keep celebrating. Seriously, we hope any of you will come back anytime you get the chance. If you're just traveling through, we hope it's a safe journey for you, and we're glad to have you here this morning. We're going to be in Mark chapter 11 and 12 today, and last time we talked about the cleansing of the temple, so you missed the excitement of the turning over tables and all of that. We're going to talk about one story that comes before that and two that come after it today, because they're kind of short, and I couldn't decide if I wanted to just make a lesson of each of them or combine them, because I feel like they kind of relate to each other a little bit, and maybe we can learn something from them in that way. So we will begin in Mark chapter 11 and in verse 12. The next day, as they were leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. Seeing in the distance a fig tree and leaf, he went to find out if it had any fruit. And when he reached it, he found nothing but leaves, because it was not the season for figs. Then he said to the tree, "May no one ever eat fruit from you again." And his disciples heard him say it. And I don't know what question comes to your mind as you read that story. The first one in my head is why, or maybe just what in the world? Here's this tree along the path, a fig tree. Do we have fig trees out here? I haven't even asked this question. I have not seen lots of fig trees in life until I worked at the last church I was at. We had a fig tree right next to our office, blocking the ramp for wheelchairs, of all places, which never made sense to me why we didn't cut that thing down. We should have Jesus come by and do what he did here. But we had a fig tree, and every now and then that thing would bring figs out, and I didn't really know what figs looked like. My experience with figs was fig Newtons as a kid. I love those things. But it had these great big leaves on it, and then it would get these little fruit. And so I imagine when I would walk by this fig tree, this whole story unfolding. As Jesus walks along with his disciples, and there's this fig tree that has no fruit. And the reason it has no fruit is it's not the right time of year for it to have fruit. And a lot of folks think that Mark interjected this little piece of the story to help make it make some sense to us, although to me, in a lot of ways, it makes it make less sense to me. Because I look at it and I think, well, if it's not supposed to have fruit right now, then why curse the fig tree? I don't understand what this is all about. And we can look at this story and be confused by it and take it in lots of different ways. But one of the places that we might look is back to chapter 7 of Mark. And I won't have this on the screen, but I will read it for you. In chapter 7, if you want to turn there, and in verse 6, he's talking to Pharisees and teachers of the law. And he says, "Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites, as it is written, 'These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are but rules taught by men.'" And what he sees here is a group of people that is supposed to be one thing and that is in fact something very different. And in this fig tree, even being out of season, his expectation is fruit. And when he runs into this tree, there is no fruit to be found. And so some, as they look at the story, will think of this as a parable that has come to life. If you follow the story of Jesus, you may have noticed along the way, if you've been very perceptive of what we're not talking about as we've gone through the life of Jesus, I have not done any parables. And the intent of that is because we're going to do parables later. But Jesus comes along and he teaches these stories in parables, which are, he likes to tell a story about something that people experience and make some sort of spiritual point to it. You may also have picked up somewhere along the way, this is what I like to do. And I probably tell entirely too many stories, but the reason I do that is because I want to connect it with something that's happening. And I think in this moment, Jesus, instead of telling the story, makes it happen. And so he has this tree that is supposed to bear a kind of fruit, and it's not. And so he curses this fig tree. We'll come back to, in a second here, why he does that. Evening comes. And what has happened in between here is this happens on the way into town. Then you have the entry into Jerusalem, and you have the cleansing of the temple. And then as they come back out, The disciples go out of the city, and in the morning as they went along, they saw the fig tree withered from the roots. Peter remembered and said to Jesus, "Rabbi, look, the fig tree you cursed has withered." And they remember. Now, they've seen something pretty impressive in the meanwhile of Jesus coming into the temple and flipping these tables over, and what seems like a fairly non-angry, aggressive guy most of the time doing a pretty angry, aggressive kind of thing. And now they run into this tree again, and they remember. Now, I think each of us needs some fig trees in life, some things that make us remember as we come across them. When I was in youth ministry, we did this thing called the Destination Unknown Devotional. And we would load everybody up on the bus, and we would go somewhere. And they did not know. And when we would get there, the devotional would have something to do with the place we were at. And part of the mentality in doing that was, as they drive around town, they will occasionally pass these places, and they now have a spiritual connection to them. And so we did a devotional at a storage unit, and we talked about stuff and how people like to store their things. We did a devotional at a power station. We talked about the power of God. We did a devotional at a crossroads in town, and we talked about how we meet these crossroads in life where we make decisions. And each time they would pass those places, it was kind of funny. When we would go to other things and we'd be driving along, I would hear somebody say, "Hey, remember when we did that?" The disciples now run across this fig tree again, and they remember. They remember that this was a weird kind of moment as they were entering into Jerusalem, and now here is this tree that Jesus cursed, and much as you would probably expect, it's now withered because he cursed it. And he says to them, "Have faith in God," Jesus answered. "I truly tell you, if anyone says to this mountain, 'Go, throw yourself into the sea,' and does not doubt in their heart, but believes that what they say will happen, it will be done for them." Jesus is teaching them about cause and effect. And for whatever reason, this is not something we normally apply to our spiritual lives. Now, we will apply it to anything else in life because this is just a scientific principle that works. You understand that when you do one thing, another thing is going to happen as a result of that. You understand that if you don't take care of your car is going to stop running. You understand that if you don't mow your lawn, the neighbors are going to call somebody. You understand that when you do things the right way, then the right things happen as a result. And as Jesus curses this fig tree, there is going to be an effect that comes with that. The not bearing of fruit, there is an effect that comes with that. And I think that is a correlation that we will see develop through all of these stories. That if we are to be a certain kind of tree, if we are to be a certain kind of people, that with that comes something that should show. And unfortunately, I don't know that it always does for us. It might show in the fact that if neighbors drive by your house right now, there's an empty driveway because you're here. But how does it show on Monday? And how does it show on Tuesday? And how does it show next Thursday? And Jesus would say there is a cause and effect going on here. "Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received and it will be yours. And when you stand praying, if you hold anything against anyone, forgive them so that your Father in heaven may forgive your sins. He will give whatever you ask." Now, we begin to struggle with this idea a little bit because we ask for stuff and we don't get it. We ask for healing of people who need healing, and sometimes those people don't get better. We ask to get out of difficult situations, and sometimes those situations get more difficult. And we have to at times acknowledge that maybe what God has in mind is something a little bit different than what we have in mind. But what he would tell us here is to continue to ask. That if we will ask and if we will pray, that God is listening. Then we find ourselves in the second story, in Mark chapter 12. One of the teachers of the law came to him, and they heard him debating, which would draw the lawyers in, I would think. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked of him, "Of all the commandments, which is the most important?" What is the most important thing that I need to remember? And we operate this way a good bit of the time. Of all the things I need to know, what do I need to know more than anything else? Of all the things I need to do, what do I need to make sure that I don't forget? And so he wants to know, what's the most important law? Because there are a lot, and I toyed with the idea of putting them up here. To the Jews in this day and time, there were 600 and some odd laws that they followed. All these little intricate things. And somewhere along the way, you probably would start to lose sight, even the most studied amongst us. And I one time put them on a slide, and they filled the slide with text at like a 6-point font that you could not even begin to read. And if you imagine trying to remember all of those things, if I pulled your driver's license test out and sat it before you today and said, take the test to keep your license, I wonder how many of us would need a ride home. Think of all the things that you have learned and forgotten over the course of time. I took calculus in college. I was better at it in high school, but I took it in college too. If you set calculus in front of me today, it's going to be a long afternoon. We tend to forget. And so this guy wants to know, well, if I'm going to forget, I want to make sure that I don't forget the most important one. So Jesus, what is the most important thing I need to know? And he says, the most important one is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength. And the second is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these. Love. This is the most important thing. Which might cause you to ask Jesus, well, why? Why is that one more important than the feasts we have to remember? Why is that one more important than this sacrifice of atonement we're going to do? Why is it more important than the Passover? Why is that more important than all the others? And the answer I think he would give you is because this one is the foundation. All of it comes back to this. And if you can remember one thing, remember to love. Because if you think of the Ten Commandments that would be the base of their 600 and whatever laws that they had, Lord your God, the Lord is one, no other gods before me, no idols. If you love God, those things all begin to take care of themselves. If you think of don't steal, don't murder, don't envy, if you love your neighbor, you don't steal, you don't murder, you don't envy. And so he would say it begins with love. Well said, teacher, the man replied. You're right in saying that God is one and that there is no other but him. To love him with all your heart and all your understanding and all your strength and to love your neighbor as yourself is more important than all burnt offerings and sacrifices. They have an agreement now. They agree on this idea, and so he's able to respect Jesus a little bit more as a teacher. So Jesus saw that he had answered wisely. He said to him, you are not far from the kingdom of God, and from then on, no one dared ask him any more questions. He is on the right track. Because he has begun with love, he is going to, unlike this fig tree that bears no fruit, he is going to bear the fruit of love. He's going to look to those around him as someone who loves his God and loves his neighbor. And that begins to change everything, which finds us in the third story. Jesus sat down, and I try to imagine this morning as we pass the trays along. We do that out of convenience. I have seen a church recently that had a box as you entered the doors. And I think it said God's treasury on it or something like that, a little hole in the top, and people would just drop it in as they went. Jesus sat on opposite the place where offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. We don't like to be watched at that time, do we? I mean, it doesn't matter how much you're putting in. Now, maybe if you're putting in a big, giant amount, maybe then you're okay with being seen. We're collecting those cans for the children's home with change in them. If you brought in an armful this morning, you know, you might be okay with being, look at all the coins and all the money they've brought in. But if for most of us, we'd just rather that be kind of a private me and God kind of thing. Jesus is sitting there watching these people, and many rich people threw in large amounts. I don't know how literal I want to take the through in, but there are those who, looking at the history of this time, the rich folks would make a show of it. They would make sure you knew I'm putting in this large amount of money. So if we're going to do it with coins, there's going to be a lot of clanging going on as that money goes in. And people would be impressed with these large amounts of money. It's kind of our nature. Now, sometimes our being impressed then pretty quickly gives way to our being annoyed and our thinking, who do they think they are? Why do they have all that stuff? But they're giving these large amounts. And then this woman comes along. Poor widow came in and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Only a few cents. Now, in America today, we look at these two people very differently. And we look at the rich and the wealthy as doing something incredibly worthwhile and having a big impact. And we look at these few coins as not all that important. If I dropped 7 or 8 pennies on the ground up here this morning, there are not many of us that would go to the trouble of bending down to pick that up. It might hurt more to bend down to get those coins than it would ever be worth to have them. Now, you'll have some little kids amongst us that think they're shiny and new and they'll want those. But for most of us, there was a time where the lucky penny meant something. Now it just means, well, who touched that in the parking lot before me? I don't want that. You look at this woman and what she gives seems so, so insignificant in the grand scheme of things. But Jesus does not see it in that way. And I hope that we don't see it in that way either. I remember vividly being in the youth group in high school, and the preacher was talking about giving. And at the time, our whole youth group sat on these first couple rows at the church I went to. And he talked about how he would watch, kind of like Jesus, I guess, he would watch as the tray would be passed down our row, and it moved quickly down that row and then down the next one full of teenagers. And he said there were several times he thought he should just get one guy at one end and one at the other end and just have him frisbee it right across there. And because it's not stopping. It's just going right across. And I think a lot of us as teenagers have bought into the idea of we're poor teenagers. I got no money other than what my parents give me if I beg for it. I don't have a lot. Most of us didn't have jobs at the time. And so what could we do that is worthwhile? And so we start to think to ourselves, ours doesn't really matter. And generationally, I think we're seeing a lot in the church that as people grow, that they really look at what they have and they just don't feel like it makes that much of an impact, so why bother? And this woman did not have that attitude. Now, a few cents to us may not seem like a lot. A few cents to her was everything. And she saw that she needed to give. That's part of who she needed to be, what she needed to do. And so she did. She put in those few cents. And for each of us, I think that's a challenge. You think about the things we do as a church and how quickly things are funded just by a few people here and a few people there. It all has an impact. Every little bit of it, whether it's a big check or a little check or change or bills or whatever it is. And this woman sees that, and Jesus sees it too. And he sees that the people around are already starting to buy into the idea that, well, it's really insignificant, doesn't matter. But it does. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow had put more in the treasury than all the others. They all gave out of their wealth, but she out of her poverty put in everything, all she had to live on." She gave more. Now, the bottom line in the ledger would not say that, but Jesus is right. She gave more because it was sacrificial to her. She gave all that she had. She gave beyond what so many others were giving that seemed like a bigger deal. And if we would all face it with that kind of mentality, and I know it's hard sometimes. I know there are times where you get further into the month and there seem to be a whole lot more bills out there and a whole lot less of what there is to give. But I will also tell you that something I have found in life is the times where you give seem to be the times where it all works out somehow. I don't know exactly how that works, if that's just God doing what God does, but it all seems to come together when we're not quite so tight with that money. And this woman has learned that lesson, I think. If she's giving all that she has, she knows she'll need money in the future, and it will be there. So she gives more than what they gave. Now, there are a few things that we can learn from all this. I think first and foremost, as we start with the idea of that fig tree, it is that we are to bear fruit, and we see different ways that that fruit is born in these other stories. It is first through our love. And if we don't have love, the rest of it doesn't matter a whole lot. If we cannot love our God and we cannot love those around us, then anything else we say is going to seem pretty fruitless to the world around us. And so it begins with love. How are we showing love? Now, our world takes love and does other things with it. Love becomes something that's sexual. Love becomes something that is full agreement with everything anybody does. And I don't think that's what God has in mind either. What God has in mind here is a love for people that is a care for people that shows. A love for people that wants people to get closer to Him. A love for people that wants their lives to be better. And not better because it's the way I like it, but better because it's the way God likes it. And so it begins with this love that shows fruit. And then another way it is shown in all places that you would not expect is in how we give. Now, part of that is our money, and that's where Jesus centers in on this moment. Part of it also is our time. Part of it is our talents, the things that we do. How are we giving to God? How are we giving to our community? How are we giving to our church? It shows our fruit. It shows what we care about. If you were to sit down with two things this week, your schedule and your checkbook, and look at those two things and see where the majority of those two things go, that should tell us a lot about who we are. And I will tell you, some days when I look at that, I'm not too happy with who I am. Because too much of my money goes places that don't matter. And a lot of my time does too. Think of how much less willing you would be to miss your favorite TV show than something that's going on around here or something going on in our community to help other people. Think of how much more willing you are to write that check to other places than you would be to do that gift to something of God, whether it be the church or something else. It's a challenge in our minds. It's the kind of things we don't like to talk about. It's the kind of things that as Jesus is standing there and he's watching the giving going on, we feel a little bit uncomfortable with that. Because we know that even if we're okay with it right now, we've had times that we're not. And even if we've had times we have done that well, maybe now is not that time. And so we're not showing the fruit that we want to show. And we find ourselves kind of in the helpless point of that fig tree. Sitting there not really being who it is we were designed to be and left in a bad place because of it. This morning, I truly believe that God has designed each one of us to be something in his kingdom. And for some of us, it is that wealthy person that gives the gifts that everybody oohs and ahs about. For some of us, it is that widow that comes in with a couple coins. For some of us, it is the outward show of love that no one can deny. And for others of us, we might do things a little more low-key than that. But whatever we're doing, we need to be showing fruit. We need to not be like those Pharisees back in Mark chapter 7, whose words and deeds did not match up. We need to be people who are showing God to the community around us. And we need to do that together. Because if we're out there doing it on our own all the time, it's too hard. That's why I put us here as a church to get this thing done. Now this morning, if you look at that and you think, I can't believe I visited on the day they talked about giving. I'm sorry, we don't do it a lot. But it is part of who we are. And if you think to yourself, I just don't have that much, it's not all that significant. I talked to that group of 40 or so teenagers that sat there watching the tray frisbee by. I thought, what if each of us put a dollar in there every week? Just a dollar. And you can claim whatever you want to claim, but if you have found the Sonic over in Springfield and all the delightful drink combinations you can have, you know a dollar goes pretty quickly. Put a dollar in there every week. And that group of 40 or so, whatever it was, this $40 a week and over 52 weeks, you now have $2,000. And $2,000 can do a lot of things. And again, not that it's about the money. It's about what we're doing and how we're showing fruit. But you'd be surprised at how that small kernel of something, God can do something pretty amazing with it. A bunch of change cans are going to affect lives in Colorado at a children's home with people who don't have parents and families and the things we take for granted. And that Randy is going to go around with a big, giant trunk full of change weighing down his car, because everybody was willing to spare some change for that. We can show fruit this week in what we do, in big ways or in small ways. And I hope we are not content to leave here without doing that. This morning, if you look at your life and you think, I'm not like that guy that Jesus talked to, the guy who was on the right track. I'm not the guy that understands those commands are the greatest ones and that I need to keep them. Then you're probably like a lot of us. We know the right answer, we just don't always seem to live that out in that way. And we'd like to help each other do that. If you'd like to take him on in baptism and to become a part of this mess of a family, we'd welcome you in. If there are things we can pray about in your life, we understand, like Jesus talked about when they recognized that fig tree, that if we pray and we ask, that God is listening. And we are happy to pray with you and to cry with you and to rejoice with you. Whatever needs you may have this morning, please come as we stand and sing.